All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Conjugate Chats. This is going to be a little bit of a different episode just because of the fact that I don't have a guest on today. This is more in line of a topic that I'm going to be talking about at Center College here in a couple days. I believe it is April 18th right now that I'm recording this, so I wanted to put this out on the Conjugate Chats as maybe as a experimental kind of thing to where I can figure out if this episode and episodes like this would be beneficial going forward, or do I need to stick to my normal guest routine, which I'm always going to have guests coming on no matter what, but I wanted to kind of switch things up in this aspect of here of this podcast, you know, continuously grow and continuously try new things with the Conjugate Chats. So what I'm going to be talking about today is basically incorporating strength and conditioning into the high school physical education setting. Now, I will preface this by saying that, you know, this is more aligned to high schools, especially public high schools. Can this be relatable to private sector guys or private school people? Sure. You know, I think this is a great topic for a lot of incoming or younger strength coaches that are wanting to go into the high school setting or the middle school setting and really either don't know how to or really want to know more about it. This is kind of in line for y'all. As far as like your private sector, or even maybe you're a college person that wants to come into the high school setting, here are just some things that, you know, I think would be beneficial and things that y'all could benefit from as well. So with that in mind, this is my presentation that I'm going to be speaking at Center College here on April 20th. I just want to record on here just in case anyone wanted to hear it or wanted to take away something from my presentation. Or if you were at the presentation, you can, you know, come back and just listen to it again on this podcast as well. All right, so with that in mind, let's go ahead and get rolling with this. I'm going to skip the intro side of things that I'm going to do at the actual presentation at the clinic. Just because for time's sake, and also just because most of y'all already know a little bit about my background already, so I think we can kind of skip that side of things and continue on to really what I want envisioned for this episode. So there's a couple of things that we need to know for this episode. One is that we have to get this idea of the weight room is a classroom. Okay, the weight room is definitely a classroom. It's much different than, you know, your traditional classrooms. Instead of desks, we got racks. You know, instead of pencils and paper, we have team builder and barbells. You know, it's definitely a lot different classroom. But I think when we, think about, like, how can we make strength conditioning incorporated into high schools, I think it needs to be done through the physical education system. And that physical education system also runs through the weight room, or at least it should. You know, it should go through our weight room. Teaching kids how to be physically literate. And this is a life skill that they're going to need for the rest of their lives. You know, I hear time and time again of kids that ask me all the time, because I teach biology currently. It's like, whenever I'm going to use biology in, you know, my life. And, you know, I'm like, you may know some backgrounds about if you want to go to medical field, whatever, you know. But being physically literate is a life skill that, you know, at some given point, every student, every person is going to have to need. So we must have this idea that the weight room is a classroom and it must be treated as such, right? You go up there, you are teaching skills, you are teaching movements to these, you know, 14, 16, 17, 18 year olds that, you know, could they use, you know, they're going to use later on in life. I had a talk with my dad a long time ago, about a couple of years ago, when I kind of graduated with a kinesiology degree. He was starting to kind of get more into like the fitness side of things. He was, you know, 50, I believe, at the time. And he asked me a very important question of, when do you think that someone should be starting their fitness journey? Or when do you think that someone needs fitness in their life? And kind of thought about it for a couple of moments. And, you know, I think that at some given point in any person's life that you're going to need fitness. You're going to need to know how to take care of yourselves. And this is just a life skill that I think every student that goes through high school needs to have. I almost call it a non-negotiable, because at some given point, whether that's in your 20s, in your 30s, or late into your 60s, whatever, you're going to need some kind of fitness. And it's better to develop these habits as a, you know, a 10, 11, 12-year-old in middle school, and or even as a 14, 15-year-old in high school, than to be diagnosed with some kind of health problem at 45 and try, you know, to do it then. So yes, that, I know that's a tangent, but the weight room is a classroom. Must understand that. Thank you to Missy Mitchell McBeth that put a tweet out that, and I thought it was just perfect. Now, here's the other aspect of things, okay? And I kind of mentioned this already. Currently in physical education, are we really teaching kids to be physically literate? You know, and I've seen it because I've been in a high school setting for almost 3-4 years now. You know, physical education has came to a point to where it's like, all right, let's roll out the basketballs, go walk, and that's really about it. You know, for maybe the first couple of months, we're doing some things, you know, whatever. But I've even seen it with my own eyes that physical education has become almost like a laughing stock of a subject. And to have that almost being in that light is kind of pisses me off a little bit, you know, because I know great coaches that can do great things with, you know, a physical education class that, you know, is being wasted in today's time. But yes, are we really teaching kids to be physically literate? Are we teaching them movements? Are we teaching them regressions? Are we teaching them progressions? Are we teaching them those essential skills to take care of themselves? Can they go to the gym and program for themselves without dying? Is their technique even like halfway decent? You know, gets to this mind, like this mind frame of, you know, if you're just rolling out basketballs or playing dodgeball all the time, what are you really teaching the kid? You know, like, yeah, I understand that everyone's going to go be a D1 college athlete, you know, college athlete, whatnot, and, you know, have NIL deals and out the wazoo and whatever, and that's fine. But what about the other kids? What about the kids that are going to go to tech school or vocational school? Or the ones that are going to go straight to work, you know, right out of high school, how are they going to take care of themselves? You know, I guarantee you that they're not going to remember what meiosis is in biology class, but they'll remember how to do things in the weight room if we just teach them the correct things in a regular PE class. And I kind of mentioned this as well, the you know, not everyone's going to go play college athletics. 6% of high school students go to play college athletics. 2% of that go D1. So what does that leave us? That leaves us with 94% of the rest of the student population that we could teach and educate. You know, that's part of our job. If you are running any kind of strength program, you are an educator. You are teaching them an essential skill that they're going to need for the rest of their life. But yes, what about the 94%? What about those other kids? What about just these regular kids? I know that they're not athletes and we primarily work with athletes and that's fine. But what about those kids that are non-sports? They need to be physically literate as well. They have to have some kind of background, some kind of training, some kind of education that teaches them, this is how you do things correctly. You know, when we learn cursive writing, there are steps that you do to make sure, and there's practice and practice and practice to make sure that you're doing things correctly. This is no different. I'm sorry, big tangents going on here, but this is just something that it's really hit home the last couple years that I found for myself. But yes, are we really teaching kids to be physically literate? You know, are we reaching out to that 94%? I remember this past year, I have a weightlifting class here at Dyer County, and sometimes I get non-athletes. And with those non-athletes, you know, I kind of have to motivate them a different way. You know, for kids that are athletes, like, well, this is going to be helping you for sport. How can I make that relatable to that kid that doesn't really play sports? He, you know, goes to school, maybe has a job and goes home and play video games, you know, whatnot. Or goes hang out with friends. You know, there's times I'm like, you know, maybe you could feel better. Maybe, you know, it's getting close to summertime. You know, you want to go get jacked or something like that. You know, find things that are relatable to the kids. You know, when I was in the education prep program for my license, that was one thing they told us was make the content relatable to the kids. Physical education is no different. You got to make the content that we are doing relatable to the kids, whether they are athletes or non-athletes. So here's where we're going to really talk about kind of 5 points, and then I'll kind of get off my soapbox, or what is it called, a soapbox or whatever that's called. So we're going to talk about the educational and the licensure side. We're going to talk about state requirements specifically for Tennessee, but you can also look up those state requirements for yourself as well. We're going to talk about a unified program, communication between us and several different people, and then, of course, monitoring and evaluating our physical education program. All right, so let's talk about the educational and the licensure side of things. For basic public schools, we get our license basically from TN Compass. That's our big governing program that, you know, we can view our license, put our professional development points. We could put, you know, if we pass the different practices on there, whatnot. So to get your teaching license, and this is probably the easiest way for anyone that's wanting to go into strength and conditioning in the high school setting, you need at least a bachelor's degree in education, specifically physical education, if you are one to go into that realm. You know, and I say that because I have a kinesiology degree that later on I had to go get a master's degree in education to teach high school subjects. And part of that is you got, you know, pass your practice exam, which we'll talk about that. For, you know, anyone that was like me, it's not the traditional route. There's things called an education prep program, which you'll hear me talk about from time to time. There's certain courses that you have to take. You have to have certain grades. I believe the master's program that I did was you have to have at least a C, a 3.0 in the program to stay within the education prep program so you can get your license. And at the end, you had to submit a thing called EdTPA. Luckily, I think the state of Tennessee got rid of that before, you know, I could get my license, and I didn't have to do that. But there's some states I know that still had to do EdTPA, which you had to send in documents and lesson plans about your subject, and I think it's like even a recording of you teaching the class and everything like that. It's wild, man. But that's just the basic requirements. Now the PE Praxis endorsement, I believe it's Praxis 5091 that is the new one that they're kind of going away from the traditional one. I think it's the content knowledge, if I'm correct. But on that content knowledge, for, you know, you have to pass a certain score. In Tennessee, it's 152. Now, I know in other states, I think it's like 149, 145, 146. I took taken the exam before. It's a beast of an exam. I believe it's 100 questions. And the score that I had was, I think, a 153, 155, something like that. I got 70 of the 100 right. So it's a very thin line of error for that there. For private schools, a lot of private schools really don't require that someone goes in to school with a license. I've seen it here in West Tennessee that a couple of schools, a couple of private schools will say, okay, we need a license in this or a practice exam on your license with whatever you need to pass whatever test. That's why I say, you know, it never hurts. It doesn't hurt to go ahead and get that practice exam over with or whatever. I know I'm speaking for Tennessee, but whatever state requirement that you have for your state, it doesn't really hurt for you to go on and get that license just in case you want to make that jump from college to high school, you know, a public high school, or go from, you know, the private sector to a high school. I think it makes you more remarkable as well. If you go into a job, you're like, I'm a licensed teacher. I teach health, wellness, and physical education. I'm also CSCS, you know, certified, whatever. I think you have a lot better chance of getting a job that way than just saying, well, I train kids on the side or whatever. But yes, that's kind of the basics of how you get your license and how public schools and how private schools view that. Talking a little bit about that education prep program, it's just approval programs that are, you know, approved by the state of Tennessee gives us the framework in order to gain our license. Most educational and government websites will have a list of some of these colleges that you can go to. I know there's alternative routes as well for most states, whether that's getting a certification, whether that's enrolling into the education prep program. Most states, I think not all of them, have some form of alternative routes, just because, one, the teacher shortage is so low nowadays, but also there's so many people changing careers as well that go from a non-traditional education background to, you know, stepping into the educational side of things. So, yes, very basic stuff. Now, the licensure and certification, I start off with the first one that I think everyone needs. It's your PE praxis or your PE endorsement. And 5091 or 5095 on the praxis website, if you want to go look and, you know, check me for that. I think that is, like, top tier. I'm not saying that it's, like, the gold standard for PE or anything like that, but I am saying that in order to step into the educational setting and to be a licensed teacher in physical education, you got to pass that exam. Now, everything afterwards, that's, you know, extra. You know, if you want to go on and get your CSCS or USAW or whatever, you know, I think that just makes you more remarkable. You know, the more stuff that, and the more education you pour into yourself, that makes you more remarkable later down the road. I will say from firsthand, you know, this is how I got my job at Dyer County. I had biology and endorsement. I had my health and wellness. I had my PE endorsement. I had my CSCS. I had my USW, and I was loaded. I was ready. You know, I would like to believe I was a good candidate for the role that I'm in right now. So that's where I'm kind of going with this, right? Before you can even incorporate a strength conditioning program into physical education, you got to be certified. You got to be licensed. And even if you don't, you know, even if you want to go to private sector and they don't require it, I still would get it just from the fact that it just makes you more remarkable. And then if you want to go from the college setting to the high school setting, or go from private sector to the high school setting, you know, that's a lot easier jump to go and have your license, so you can make that jump or make that career change for yourself. Now, let's talk about state requirements. I looked at the state requirements for Tennessee very, very thoroughly in this aspect up there. All right, so keep in mind with this, when admin looks at classes, they look at standards. They are looking at them saying, are we meeting the state standards that are put out by the state themselves? And as educators, we must follow those state standards. You know, that kind of makes sense. And that's part of being being an educator, is looking at standards, breaking it down, and seeing how to implement that in class. And correct me if I'm wrong, but telling kids to go on, you know, go on walks or to just roll out the basketballs is not really doing the job for, you know, meeting state requirements, nor is it telling kids to be physically literate. I mean, are we really hitting state standards at that point? I like to think no, because there are several things that we need to hit in our state standards for specifically Tennessee. And there's several things that, you know, you must, you know, check off. And when I looked at this, okay, there's five basic standards that Tennessee falls under. You fall under motor skills, cognitive skills, fitness and physical activity, personal and social responsibility and values, and physical activity. Here's where I think a lot of physical educators, not just in Tennessee, but anywhere, kind of get lost. Under the motor, there is what's called game and sports. So when you learn different sports, and that's great, you know, being exposed to different sports and different activities is great. But it's not the only thing on there. And same thing with game rules. You know, we're teaching kids the game and then the game rules, right? You got to understand the rules to play the game. But again, it's not just roll out the basketballs, play basketball. Roll out the dodgeballs, play dodgeballs. Just go for walks. You know, whatever. There's a lot more responsibilities to that. And I wish some of y'all could see, like, the standards that we have on here. Like, there is tactics and strategies, there's skill analysis, there's movement, concepts, and principles, there is assessments, exercise prescription. These are things that are in the Tennessee State Standards that we need to be teaching them. And they're not being taught. And I probably say 99% of Tennessee. Now, there's always a few, you know, of course, that we can go to, you know, a few different schools and, you know, they got a rock and roll and stuff like that, but I'll say for the majority part, not just in Tennessee, but anywhere, we're really not hitting the state standards that we are set out to teach. So, for example, I want to highlight this fitness and physical activity standard that we have for Tennessee. Okay? I'm going to read this to y'all, and you make your own judgment. Okay? Fitness and physical activity. Health-related components. The first standard this says, explain how health-related components of fitness impact overall health status, i.e. body composition, cardiovascular endurance, muscular endurance, muscular strength, and flexibility. Okay, it says explain. It doesn't say participate. It doesn't say do. Okay, we can explain it. You know, that is a classroom kind of standard to where, you know, you are teaching them, you know, strength training is important because of XYZ thing. Here is where we take another turn. Fitness and physical activity, standard 2 in the health and related components. Participate in health-related fitness activities, i.e. weight training, stretching, and cardio workouts. Now, don't call me crazy, but I'm pretty sure it says that we need to be weight training in physical education class. And I looked at the standards. I've seen probably walk one time on there. And again, you know, you could play basketball for cardio, you know, workout, whatever, or cardiovascular endurance or whatever. That's fine. You know, it's a fun activity that most kids like to play, but not all kids like to play, you know, basketball. I'm one of them that did not want to play basketball. I'd rather play dodgeball, and I played basketball like to play football. You know, I saw ball and got ball, you know, whatever, you know, that's kind of how I rolled. But even then, let's look at the skill-related components on these state standards. It says, explain skill-related components on the impact of sport and fitness, i.e. balance, agility, power, speed, coordination, and reaction time. And when I thought about reaction time, I thought about instantly deceleration work, right? I know that's kind of I don't want to say an overshadowed aspect of, you know, strength conditioning, but we focus so much on linear speed and, you know, excel, max velocity speeds that a lot of times we even forget that deceleration is part of our job. You know, we need to teach kids how to decelerate, you know, at higher rates. I'll guarantee you that not a whole lot of, you know, physical educators And I'll be even one of the strength coaches that hardly teach deceleration, whether that be for time or space or whatever. And I need to do a better job of it too. I've started to incorporate it a little bit into what we do every day here at Dyer County. But according to state standards, reaction time is one of those. Even if you got to take a tennis ball and bounce it where the kid's got to go and grab it, you know. But yeah, there's aspects of speed and power and agility that go into this. And it also says to participate in skill-related activities. Things like yoga, even the agility. I know we don't like the agility ladder, but at the same time, it would be a great way to incorporate maybe some warm-ups into our, you know, strength conditioning PE setting. And to be honest with you, I think it even helps with a little bit of coordination. Call me crazy. I think it helps with a little bit of coordination. You ever seen a 13-year-old go through an agility ladder, just 1 foot in each little box, 1 foot in each hole, and they drag their toes and, you know, the ladder starts to become like a DNA strand where it's all twisted and stuff, man. Like, I think there's some help to, you know, having at least a little bit of agility ladders. You know, yes, the name is like misleading. We are not working on agility, but we can at least get a little bit of coordination and raise up our heart rate a little bit. Plus, kids kind of like the agility as well. It also says to participate in plyometrics, which, of course, we know as strength coaches, you should be doing already, right? We should already have plyometrics into our settings. And that should be year-round as well, not just from a strength point, for now as a physical education point. Continuing on with some of these things, fitness and physical activity. Okay, physical activity knowledge. It says to apply fitness terminology in appropriate settings. Things like anaerobic, aerobic, target heart rate, the fit principle, isometric, warm-up, cool-downs. These are things that kids, I think, need to know. They need to know what isometric is. Do you know how many times that I've taught what an isometric is? Well, I don't understand what that means. Teach them. Hey, even if you got to repeat yourself 1,300 times to do it. Like, teach them what a warm-up should look like. Teach them what an isometric should look like. Teach them why weightlifting is anaerobic. Tell them, like, the energy systems, right? A phosgene system compared to, a glycolytic system, you know, whatever, man. Like, teach them, or oxidative system. Like, teach them these different terminologies. Teach them why we're not running poles in baseball practice, and we're running like 10-yard flies with a 5-yard build, or a 30-yard fly with, a 10-yard fly with a 30 build. You know, tell them these things. You know, tell them why we have some of these principles, like overload principle or progression, regression. Why are we regressing from, you know, a bat squat to a goblet squat, or a bat squat to a zombie squat? You know, or why are we progressing from, you know, a goblet squat to a front squat? Why does that matter? And even if we look at, like, this standard for physical and fitness and physical activity, to where we're talking about exercise prescription and we talk about the fit principle, you know, that's a great time to tell kids about, like, how we program, how we, do things throughout the entire year, why the frequency is lower in some times of year than, and the intensity is in higher times of the year. You know, there's always a time and place for everything. And that's a great example of how we can incorporate, you know, what we do as a profession into an educational setting. And I know some kids won't understand it. I know some kids are not going to, you know, so they're going to tune us out, right, when we start talking about, well, when we get into season and then the volume drops and then the intensity drops and the frequency drops because we're in season, but we're still trying to do some things so we can, you know, maintain or keep a lot of the strength aspects that we have. I know some kids will tune that out, but you can at least tell them, like, we have an organized plan of what we're doing. You know, we're not showing up, collecting a check, and then going home, right? We're actually doing something with the time that we're given in the physical education class. And then lastly, this one I got here is assessment, where We're seeing participation in health-related fitness testing. You know, whether that's be, you know, your cardiovascular test or the PACER test or whatever, you know, some, and we can interpret those results. And that's a state standard as well for Tennessee. We have to interpret data to these kids, interpret some things about their fitness level. Your cardiovascular is a little bit lower, but your strength is a little bit higher. You know, you could be a little bit stronger. You're probably more of a type 2 muscle fibers than you are muscle 1. Again, that's terminology. Now, that is just 9 of those standards. In the state of Tennessee, we have 47 state standards. 47 state standards for physical education. And roughly about 29 to 30 of them have to do with strength conditioning. Don't believe me? Let's read a couple of these different standards here. Demonstrate an activity specific to manipulative skills. So things like throwing, catching, striking, kicking, or sport-specific skills, such as a serve, a putt, a cradle, or a sprint start. And I know we all love our sprints. And that's good enough reason for me to sprint in a PE class. Engage in specialized skills and health-related fitness, i.e. yoga, resistance training. And it does say on here, on the state center, fitness walking. Yes, you can. You can walk. Like that, even, yes, walking is such a great thing for you. But not all the time. You know, it kind of gets old after a little bit. And I know there's zone 2 training and you can, you know, dive down that, you know, that rabbit hole, whatever. But there's more than just basketball, walking, and dodgeball in the PE setting. Let's look at a couple of these different ones and I'll move on. Analyze movement and concepts. Analyze movement concepts and principles to improve performance. Things like your force, your center of gravity. Justify the importance of each critical element in regards to skill performance, the when, the why, the how. Use appropriate sport-specific terminology, traveling, you know, whatever. Those are things that I think if you're a strength coach, you should know ball. You should know, you know, what traveling is. You should know a little bit about the sport. And most of us do because we've probably played sports before. Calculate and apply resting, maximum, and target heart rate through various activities like gameplay, cardiovascular activities, probably circuit training. Even on here, it says, discuss current trends in physical technology. You know, I didn't really get to have that in my football class. Like, when I played football, it was awesome. You know, I played for a really good coach, and I played for a really good team, and I played for a really good school. The thing that they did not teach me was the different apps that are out there, like MyFitnessPal. I learned MyFitnessPal from my dad when I was in college. Like, I didn't know that there was a thing that I could track my macros and track how much food I'm eating. And that's, again, that's an eye-opener in case anyone, you know, does that. Or heart rate monitors. I got my first heart rate monitor like a year ago. And I didn't realize the technology that was out there. Let's go to the strength side of things, where there's GPS now, there's laser timers, there's force plates, there's jump mats, whatever. There's so much technology out there that, you know, is available to these kids. iPads and software and everything like that. Even now, they're starting to teach kids how to code in the high schools. I didn't have that in high school. I think it was like an introductory thing when I got into high school. But now, you know, kids have so much opportunity, and I think it's part of our job to expose them. Like, yeah, we're going to use Team Builder on these iPads, and then we're going to run through those lasers because it gives us accurate readings. That is part of our state. That's part of being an educator and the physical educator. It's not just, you know, being a sport coach and then rolling basketballs out. I know I use that example all the time, but I see it. I call a spade, people. Let's look at a couple of other different ones, so I'll move on. It says here to apply best practices for participating safely in physical activity, i.e. Educate safe equipment and facility use, peer evaluation, peer awareness, environment, even being aware of your personal medical needs. And I think even if you got even a little bit of something going on, like when I was in high school, I had pre-diabetes. And, you know, when I was going through weight training and running and practice, you know, that was always on the back of my mind. I had to take my blood sugar. I had to take my medicine. I think being in a physical educator now, that makes total sense that, you know, you're keeping a self-awareness about yourself. You know, even if you're looking at body composition, saying, man, my shoulder's starting to pop out a little bit more. Or you're like, my clothes are fitting a little bit looser. You know, my jeans are a little bit looser, but my shirt's a little bit tighter. You know, I think those are things that we need to, you know, highlight as physical educators. Saying, you know, be aware of what's happening with your body. You know, I talked to teens about that. Said, you know, when we start this, you know, it takes a while for, you know, someone to be absolutely massive. You know, it takes a lifetime. Almost a lot of time to be absolutely just jacked out of your mind, and dedication and consistency in your diet and your plan and your workouts to be jacked. You know, but I always tell teens, like, take in what you're kind of experiencing. You know, your body's going to be sore for right now, but in a couple of weeks, you're not going to be as sore, you know, stuff like that. All right, so let's move on to a unified program. So what is a unified program? Unified program is in which all, meaning coaches, teams, athletes, non-athletes, practice in familiar ways. Now, I use the word practice for a good reason. When we go into the weight room, and I sold this from somewhere on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. But when you step in the weight room, you are practicing movements. You are practicing, you know, strength training. And it should be presented as that. We are practicing. Practice makes perfect. And we're practicing athletic qualities like how to push, how to pull, how to squat, how to hinge, how to sprint, how to throw, how to jump, and how to rotate properly without, you know, throwing out your back or everything like that. And I've heard this, like, I saw this on Twitter. I go through Twitter a lot, man. Like, I saw a tweet where it was like, squats and deadlifts are bad for you. And I kind of thought about it for a moment. I was sitting there thinking, I said, no, improper technique and improper management, load management of the individual is bad for your back, knees, whatever. You know, I think about that a lot to where, you know, I see kids with their rounded backs and, you know, we tell them to brace and we tell them to, you know, squeeze your shoulder blades back and everything like that, pull from the floor and, you know, pull through your heels, whatnot. And, you know, I come back to that tweet. It's like, no, deadlifts are not bad for you. Squats are not bad for you. What's bad for you is the fact that you're doing it. You're probably got too much weight on there to begin with, especially if you train boys. Like, guys think they can squat 500 pounds, and then they get, you know, stapled with 315 on. Or they deadlift 500 pounds with a rounded back, and they wonder why, you know, their lumbar spine is on fire, man. Like, improper load and improper progression and improper technique is what causes so much pain or agony or whatever. It's not the exercise, it's how it's approached. But yeah, let's go back to the unified program. So I pitched this to a lot of admin as well, or at least the people that, you know, make schedules and, you know, maybe our counselors. I asked them and said, you know, do you really expect me to teach a freshman and a senior athlete the same thing? Now, if they say yes, okay, let's put this into context, right? Do you expect a freshman and a senior to learn on the same level? Some will probably say yes, some will say no, some will say, you know, our favorite phrase, it depends. And so I'll put it like this. When we're learning math, right, if we put a senior and a freshman together in the same class, let's say calculus, for example. So you're expecting this 14-year-old, 13-year-old that came from middle school, probably did basic math of, you know, y equals mx plus b, you know, find slope, intercept form, and whatnot, to doing calculus. Where the senior athlete's, you know, getting ready to go to college, and this freshman athlete or this freshman kid is just now entering high school and going through puberty, man. Like, do you really expect that freshman and that senior to do the exact same thing and have positive results? And I would hope that a majority of people will say no. And that's what it's like in the physical education setting or a strength setting in today's time. You know, we get kids that are not physically literate. Whether that's, you know, just regular students or that's, you know, that freshman that walks in day one to summer training. You know, there's a proper plan and, you know, progression that goes into teaching them skills about how to squat, how to hinge, how to bench, how to press, how to pull. You know, it's not just going to the weight room, lift heavy stuff, which I love, man. I mean, I'm not saying not lift heavy. That is not what I'm telling y'all to do, you know. And that's not what I'm trying here to preach. I'm preaching that, you know, there's a proper progression to things. You know, some kids are just not ready for the barbell. I mean, I wrote about this about 2-3 years ago. I wrote about that freshmen are not ready for the bar, or freshmen should or earn the barbell. And I use the word earn for a specific reason. You know, there is work that puts in, that you had to put in order to prove that you are ready for that. And I did this when I was at Bolivar almost about a year and a half now. I just noticed that a lot of our guys were core squatting. I noticed that, you know, we're not really hitting depth. Our hip mobility was really, really awful. So, I mean, even there was a couple of juniors, several sophomores, and all the freshmen went through this regress program that I had that, you know, a lot of our varsity guys, some had decent technique, some were, I call borderline, but a lot of others just, it wasn't getting the job done, man. I call a spade a spade, said we are going to regress, we're going to do the goblet squats till the cows come home, until you can do 100 pounds, and then you can go back on the barbell. And as a result of that, a lot of guys kind of, first of all, there was some pushback. You know, why am I being punished? It's like, it's not being punished. It's for your own good, because I used to veto record a lot at that time, and it's like, look, dude, your hip needs to be almost, you know, to almost at like mid-calf level, or a little bit, you know, in that vicinity, and you are like not even hitting, you know, at the knee or anywhere close, man. Then, you know, throwing on 315 is really not doing you any justice. It proves to me nothing. You're not strong to handle the load, and you're not strong enough to go full depth with it. Again, you do get a little bit of pushback, but at the same time, I think kids kind of appreciate the honesty too, to where they're like, okay, let's do this thing. And I don't know, it was just because I was a football coach at the time, and, you know, some of their guys were linemen that I was really talking to, that, you know, I'm showing them like, look, your hip mobility sucks, man. And they're, you know, I always get the phrase of, well, I'm too tall, I'm too big, or anything. I don't believe in all that. So that's why we regressed. And it comes back to the idea, like, I don't chase an exercise. I really don't. You know, I would love for everyone to be back squatting and front squatting and throwing on dumb weight and just making it look beautiful. Here's the reality of things. That's not going to happen. Especially in a high school setting, that's not going to happen. Now, it may happen as time has gone on. You know, you've been there for a little bit, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, you kind of are, you set your expectations, you're running, you're running a well-oiled machine. But, you know, in year one and twos that I've been at, that's not going to happen. You know, I chase the stimulus, I don't chase the exercise. So, for example, when we do things like block one and block two and block one, zero programs, you know, I look at it from a stimulus standpoint rather than a exercise standpoint. And tying it all back to that education prep program, you know, they tell us that we had to, what's called differentiate instruction, that not all kids are going to be at the same pace. Well, it's the same thing, but in the high school setting for strength and conditioning. Not all of the kids that we see are going to be proficient movers. Now, there's been some freshmen that have absolutely shocked me, right? They come in and their back squats look great, and they tell me, you know, I've never done this before, and that's, you know, they're just a freak of nature. They're just naturally talented. Those are usually our better players for that aspect of things. But I'll say probably about 89% of kids are really not that great of movers, and nor have they been taught to do that from middle school or from elementary school. Now, in elementary school, I mean, I get it. You know, that's a time to play and, you know, exert energy, everything like that, man. I'm not saying you got to learn a kid how, or, you know, a six-year-old kid how to back squat day one in elementary, like third grade PE. But at least in middle school, start incorporating things like goblet squats and, you know, maybe zombie squats with, you know, a PVC pipe or something like that. Something that they can, you know, work on in middle school. So when they get to high school, they can do the big boy weight, or they can do the heavy weights, or they can start incorporating those heavy weights and really getting stronger. But yeah, there's a proper way to do this, having a unified program. You know, we are chasing stimulus. We are not chasing exercise. So I'd rather kids go through like a 1x20 program, right? That's got little to zero experience in the weight room. You know, body weight work and dumbbells. There's a lot of things that you can do with just some dumbbells and body weight. And if you don't believe me, scratch everything out of your program that's not a barbell, that's not in racks, and does not have med balls. And then figure it out. I think when you're a strength and conditioning coach, you got to have a little bit of creativity on your side. And that creativity really shows through in when you have limited supplies or when you have limited equipment around. You know, I'm really blessed here at Dodge County that I got everything that I've ever wanted. I got space, I got time, I got tech, you know, but there was a time and place to where, you know, I was training a football team of maybe 50, 60, and we got four double-sided racks, some barbells, and I think, if I'm doing the math correctly, 40 plates. So each kid could do 225 squats. But of course, you know, not everyone was doing 225 squats. So how do you make that work? Again, you get that little bit of creativity. So, you know, in block zero, I would love to see people run a 1x20 program. I'm running a 1x20 when we enter summer training for our freshmen football players that come in, just because I don't know where they're at. Some could be proficient movers, and we'll progress them as so. Some could be terrible movers, which I'm expecting, and they're going to run 1x20 till the cows come home. You know, we're running all the way in season. In next off season that we run, if they're proficient movers, we'll progress them as so. If not, we'll stick to 1x20, and we'll do it till they are proficient enough to do it. You know, in block one training, we start incorporating things like supersets. Like, this is what a superset should look like. Again, terminology that kids probably need to know. Especially if they go to a collegiate setting to where, you know, they may do a lot of group sets or a lot of supersets. Even introducing Olympic lifts. If you don't want to introduce Olympic lifts, okay, that's just your flavor, man. But for our program that we're doing right now, I'll introduce them in block one. A lot of our just regular student kids, you know, just regular kids in our school system are probably in the block zero category. And in my weightlifting class, that's what we did. We did 2 months of 1x20, and then we progressed into what's called starting strength, 3x5, and some repeated effort work for some hypertrophy work. And then if we get advanced enough to where we have 2+ years of training, you know, I love incorporating triphasic training because it incorporates isometrics, it incorporates eccentric works that I think intensifies a program even more. And we're just increasing the intensity because we have progressed them from block zero, from block one, into a program in which they can handle now. They can handle taking 315 on back squat for a 6-second ride down, you know, and come right back up and not get stapled. that's part of having a unified program. You know, we're not all, well, we're all doing something similar, right? We're doing something similar. It's just progress or regress in ways that fit the needs of our kids. Now, the next aspect of things is talking about communication. Communication between coaches, athletes, whatnot. I mean, I can't blame coaches totally, right? You don't know what you really don't know. And I don't blame kids. Again, you don't know what you don't know. You know, they go to the gym, on the local gym, and they want to max out every week. You know, again, you don't know what you don't know, but at the same time, that's why we're called educators. You know, that's why it's called physical education. It's because we are going to educate them. I heard it from Dan Mullins, I think when he was on here or when he was on a different podcast, that, you know, he tells kids, leave me the big rocks. Like, I want to, you know, we're going to do benches, we're going to do squats, we're going to do, you know, all this other stuff in here. You can go to a local gym and do, you know, your little rocks, biceps, triceps, arms, you know. There's worse things that a kid could be doing besides going to a local gym and trying to get a pump in. Like, they could go out and be, like, underage drinking and driving and, you know, smoking weed and whatnot. And, you know, I get it. I get a little frustrated when, you know, Monday's been back squat day for, you know, 4 months, and a kid comes and says, like, coach, I can't do back squats today. My legs hurt. Like, why is your legs hurt? It's because, well, I did legs Sunday. I know we did. It's like, I know we get frustrated, but at the same time, like, there could be worse things that kids could be doing besides getting a pump in. And even this communication gives coaches and athletes, just, I guess, reassurance and what this program is doing for, you know, for us. It kind of ties into the last point, but, you know, results really speak for themselves. I'm a big component of telling coaches where the program is actually going. It's why I spend so much time on, you know, you probably see on Twitter where, like, we get data reports, or I try to pull up a sheet to where we can show, and I've shared some of our sheets with, you know, our coaches, saying, here's the leaderboard, here's where our main points are at, here's where I'm collecting data, here this, you know, and put it in front of their face, because data don't lie. Data does not lie. You know, when we have someone that's been not training for 70% of the off season, and then they come in, they're weaker than everyone else, the results don't lie. And that's something that you can give your coaches as well. And, you know, communicate with them. Hey, so-and-so has not been at our off-season session in, like, 2 weeks. I mean, I had a girl that she didn't show up, I think, for 2 months, and now she's kind of getting back in the swing. She has some things going on. I mean, I get it. But, you know, I just looked at the numbers the other day, and you can just see that, like, the trends are going down. And said, this is why you need to be in here with me, and, you know, taking this maybe a little bit more seriously than what you are. Again, to each their own, but I just think communication, just to your athlete, being bluntly honest with them, is like, you know, your basketball looks absolutely terrible right now because you're just not ready for it. You know, having those kind of hard conversations. And then monitor and then evaluating your program. This is the last point here. The big question I ask myself is, how do I really know my program is working? How do I know the reps, the sets, the intensity, the plyometrics, the whole program? How do I know that is working? One thing I do for myself is I do set realistic goals for myself. One thing for our girls team this semester was to be consistent as a group, for softball and for volleyball, saying we need to be more consistent across the board, even in season. Now, I know baseball and softball play like 30 games in 1 week. It is ridiculous. I did not realize that. But I always communicate with a head coach saying, here's a plan. I know you want to go maybe once or twice a week. Let's aim for two and at least maybe get one. And, you know, she's honest with me too. She comes from a physical education, personal training kind of background. She said, well, a lot of girls are banged up. Can we at least take a couple of days off? Okay, cool. And they're riding in the next day. You know, and I appreciate that. And that comes back to that communication, you know. And our head volleyball and softball coach, same person. She does a wonderful job of keeping the girls accountable and keeping them on track and keeping them in the weight room. There's some things that I've seen from the girls this season. You know, they're hitting normal. Some girls that don't normally hit home runs are hitting home runs. Girls that don't normally have that confidence, that stagger about them, they're starting to walk around with some swagger, you know, to their walk, and it's really cool to see that turn. That's kind of how I know a program's working, is that coaches are starting to buy in. And I've heard from a couple of other coaches that come to me, it's like, hey, I want to work with you over summer. What can we do? Even like things like injury rates. Is there less visits to our AT? And I hear from our AT here, you know, so-and-so has got this going on, and he kind of lets me know, like, you know, their limitations. Again, communication between our AT staff. I'll always ask our AT here, I ask them, like, can they do, like, if they have, I can't believe I had to say this, but, like, a busted toe or, you know, someone dropped a dumbbell on their toe and their toenail's coming off. I was like, can they do, like, single leg work? Yeah. Okay, cool. And I can modify things for them. In the off season, you know, even looking at, like, having this coaching eye test that I did with, you know, my baller for kids, to where we're no longer core squad and we're hitting death, we're getting lower. That's a sign that, you know, things are working. Again, strength numbers. You know, I go core system where I look at our strength numbers quarterly, four times a year. And the kids always ask me, it's like, when are we going max again? When are we going max again? It's like, we're going max when it's time to max. And I have certain days that I have in mind, and I try to avoid, like, final exams and, you know, state testing and all that stuff when we do any sort of, like, maxing or spring break or whatever to kind of minimize some issues. Daily sprints, you know, are sprint times getting better? Are they not? Do we have the same kid that's hitting, you know, 0.29 for, like, 10 weeks straight? I had a kid right now that, for the life of him, he could not break the 1-3 barrier. I mean, we did sled marches and sled pulls, and he squats like 450, I think, now. And we did, I sat there and thought to myself, like, I don't know what else to do. You know, I've done, you know, everything that I possibly could do besides sprinting more. And then we start upping the volume a little bit from, like, two sprints to three, and then three to four. And then, you know, just one day, you know, week, I think 12 or 13. Popped off a 1-2-8 and then a 1-2-6 back to back. I mean, absolutely just blew me away. Keeping great data reports or data tracking allows you to do things like, okay, our program, our strength numbers started to dip. Why is they starting to dip? Is it because we're in like week, I don't know, 7 of our program, and they've already played, you know, a trillion games up to that point and they're tired? Probably. And, you know, I always, you know, I look at this and say, why do we even monitor? Why do we evaluate a program? Why? Because it keeps everyone motivated. It keeps coaches motivated. It keeps, I think even to a point, it keeps us motivated. Is our program working? Strength numbers are up. We're getting faster. We're more powerful. We're explosive. Things are going in the right direction. We are improving. And I think it becomes even evidence that kids are becoming physically literate. I'll tell you about the kid that I had in my weightlifting class last semester. Kid came in, he couldn't bench the barbell. He was a senior in high school, could not bench the barbell, 45 pounds. He told me it was too heavy. And I kind of looked at him and said, you know, quit BSing me. Let's just put it straight. Quit BSing. The kid was not BSing. He was just not strong. And then by the end of that semester, he was benching about 100 pounds, which to me is a win. You know, he came in, he worked hard. I mean, God bless his heart. He could not do a chin-up, which chin-ups are hard. We like to do hard things around here. I had to regress them to bodyweight squats, and then we go to Gobbler, and then we did the zombies, and then, and there's some days he came up to me and goes, Coach, this sucks. I hate not being able to do the things that some of the other kids were doing in class. Again, I think that's a little bit peer evaluation or a peer awareness of, like, I'm really not that strong. I need to get stronger. And a social awareness of, like, I need to do this. I need to get better. I think he was squatting 150, 155. He was squatting, like, 10s on each side when we first started. I mean, couldn't hit death or anything like that. But now, you know, working with me and, you know, in my class, and he's starting to kind of realize, like, I'm getting better. I'm getting better over time. And that's really all that's it's about, man. I'll leave with this here. I talked to Coach Justin Loudon about everything physical education on the educational side of things with strength and conditioning. Me and him come from a more wrestling background, which I think starts to kind of flare up in my programming. Like, I'm starting to do a little bit more of, like, neck bridges and neck training, and because I understand that value that it could bring to an athlete. And I came up with this basic model of teach, learn, play, adapt. That's basically all the science of strength conditioning in education combined. You teach them, they learn it, they play, they adapt. The only thing that you have to do is teach. You know, you don't know what you don't know. Teach them. Teach them hard. So when they go to learn it, okay, they can, they can understand what's going on. So you teach, they learn, they play. I think playing is such a great aspect for athletic development. There's several coaches that just think outside the box of, like, different movements and different patterns, and just letting their athletes kind of go in this open chain environment that can cause them to, you know, hit new stimuluses. Again, we're hitting stimulus. We're not hitting exercises. We're hitting stimuluses. And then when they hit the new stimuluses, they adapt. This is just this is a little bit of biology background coming for you. Right? If you're hit with a stimulus, you're going to adapt to it. You're going to adapt to your surroundings. And I think that's why it's such a great way of presenting this as, this model presented to kids and presented to, you know, physical educators is you're teaching it, they learn it, and then let them play and adapt to that environment. Let them adapt. Let them figure some of this stuff out. I know it's not going to be perfect. Lord, I mean, like, I've been this thing almost 3 years now of teaching, progressing, everything like that. It's not going to be perfect. But I'd rather it be not perfect and continuously work on it than them to go to some random PE teacher and then not learn these essential skills that, you know, they're going to need. And I say going to need later on in life, they can need it now. Some kids probably need the true physical education now. They don't need it, you know, when they're 30 or 40 trying to figure this stuff out. Why not take the time? I know kids are resistant and they're rebellious and whatnot. I mean, but you can at least put it in front of their face. Teach them. Make them learn. Make them play. And then so they can adapt to these different environments. Okay, that's the end. That's the end of my rants here. I do want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to this. And if you are listening to this part of the episode, I do want to shout out Team Builder. They sent me to Center College and everything like that. I proudly rep Team Builder. We use it at Dyer County all the time. And the kids love it. I love it because it makes things 10 times easier on my end. I also want to shout out Jeremy Carlson. Thank you, brother, for letting me come to Center College and talk about this great thing that we call strength and conditioning in the field that we're in. All right. Well, in the name of strength, stay strong and have a day today.